This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
In order to get started and to get you guys kind of your wheels going, we're not going to do a lot of introductions. You know the drill. The short version is, this is Caleb McCumber. Fantastic fisherman, tournament fisherman, likes to run skinny, occasionally gets stuck. More than occasionally gets stuck. This is Captain Scott Null, tarpon, redfish, sight casting, poling, former HPD, and just a hell of a good fisherman. Just a really, really, really good fisherman. I'm sure he's been stuck, but we like to make fun of Caleb more, so we don't talk about Scott nearly as much as we do Caleb. All right, boys, I'm going to give Scott the mic now, and I'm going to just be using this right here. I'm just going to be using this right here, so I'll be standing up here. Normally, it's the three of us talking fishing. We got two great minds right here, so I'm going to leave it mostly to them. I'm going to direct the questions to them, but we're going to start, boys, in order to get the wheels turning, with what we actually talked about in today's podcast. With today's podcast posted about noon or so, 1 o'clock or so today. But I'd like for you guys to elaborate on what we're doing. I'd like for you guys to elaborate on what we're doing right now with wind. We all know, how many of y'all have been out in the water in the last month? Which direction has the wind been blowing, prevailing? Up, down, east, west, south, north. So I'm going to start with that point right there. We touched on it in today's podcast. But what I really want these guys to start this Q&A with is the strategy when there is no prevailing wind. I'll start with you, Caleb.
There's people here with pens and notepads.
That's right.
I'm nervous. I'm intimidated. Yeah, so this time of year, it we do have winds coming every direction. It seems like every couple of days. And one of the things that I've always said is really important, more so than the strategy, is whenever you're going fishing and you know that the wind is going to be blowing out of the north tomorrow, right? It's important to know that it blew out of the south for the last 2 days before you got there. I'll run you through my week of guiding. Wednesday, I went out and we had a dead calm, flat, smooth day. So I had the pick of the litter. I went to the south shoreline. My customer and I caught a bunch of redfish. We waited. It was great. Had a good time. Thursday, the wind picked up some. It was blowing 15 to 20, a little bit of 25, and it made the shoreline not quite what I was looking for, so we ended up going and drifting, and we caught some really good fish drifting. And so the typical guy would be like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to go back to wade, or I'm going to go back to drift that spot. Well, the next morning at 7 o'clock, the winds are still kind of light, and it looks good, but we know the north wind's coming. The trouble is I had to plan for the north winds because that 25 the day before when I caught fish and did great and the water looked good had muddied up the north side. Well, now I've got a north wind coming and my only protected side is the north side. At that point, then you're really digging into your memory bank or your maps or whatever, and you're trying to find those coves that are running east and west on the west shoreline or an east shoreline to counter both of those, right? But the most important thing about the wind, there's not an answer that like this is what you do, but the way to fight it or the way to come out the best you can is to not only pay attention to the heavy wind you have the day, but what have you had the days before, and then just put in your mind, you know, what directions, what's shored up in that regard.
I'm just glad you were paying attention when I was talking.
you were talking?
Yeah, because you just repeated everything that I said on the podcast yesterday. Very good.
Did
good.
You
got an A.
It was. subliminally, I paid attention.
Yeah. Yeah, he pretty much nailed it. I mean, my biggest deal has always been, especially when I was working at HPD, I didn't get to fish all the time. Didn't get to fish near as much as I do now. But I would sit there, my lieutenant hated it, but I'd be on the computer, and I'd be looking at the wind more than I was working on my cases. And I was like, okay, I'm fishing in 3 days, so if I'm going to watch that, I got a south wind. Oh, damn, there's a north wind. It popped in the middle of it. So that's going to screw up that spot. And, yeah, your brain's always working on it as far as what your next move's going to be. Being on the water every day like Caleb is, like I am when my shoulder's not screwed up, we get to see it, and we get to see the progression of it every day and what changes from day to day, how the wind moves the bait, how the wind moves the dirty water. You have to sit there in your office or wherever you're at, and you're supposed to be doing something else, and you're looking at the winds, picture in your mind, okay, my favorite little spot's here with that wind. Get on Google Maps and, you know, kind of draw it out for yourself and see how it's affecting that shoreline, those points that you like to fish, and pay attention to that as the week goes on. And then by the time it gets time for you to fish, then you know that spot's out, that spot's out, that spot's out, that's probably my best bet. And then plan your day around that, around what happened throughout the entire week, not just what's going on that day.
To further elaborate, we've all been in the spot where a lot of y'all are, where we've had to sit in the office and learn this stuff. And the best current day example I have is Captain Pat Gardner, who we talk about all the time on the show. Pat lives up near Kingwood, and I can call Pat on any given day because this happens regularly. And, hey, Pat, you know, what are you? Pat and I bounce our ideas off each other. I'm like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. What are you thinking? And Pat can be sitting in Kingwood and could have been there for the past 3 days. And without getting on his computer, he can tell me the wind direction, the water level. He's paying attention to it even though he's not on the water. And it's a lot more important than it sounds to know everything that is going on for the past 72 hours or so.
All right, before we get to your questions, they're next. But this is a question that we always get, and that would be, all right, that's all cool, and that's important, but I want to catch fish. I'm going out this weekend. What do I throw? What do I look for this time of year? I mean, it's March going into April. I think that's a question I always get, you always get. What are you throwing? What color? What bait? Hard bait? Soft bait? Et cetera. So I think that's a good way to get into some of your questions, because we all want to catch fish, if not this weekend, soon. The basics right now of what to throw, when to throw, where to throw.
I don't know what I did to make you mad to keep getting this thing first. There's a lot going on here. So right now we're in March. We're in a transition period. It's the small stuff starting to hatch. It's not quite here yet. You're still working on some of your winter bait where you have some the bigger mullet. You know, I'm still looking for the 4 and 5 inch mullet. So I'm really looking to just to know that I'm going to go out and catch some fish. I'm letting that wind dictate where I'm at in the bay, and then I'm hoping the wind blows enough to streak up the water, give me some dirty water. If I can see those 4 or 5 inch mullet flipping around in it, even better. What I'm throwing right now, I'm throwing short purple rat tails. That's what I'm throwing. If those aren't working, then I'm moving to a paddle tail, because right now I've still seen some shrimp here and there, not a whole lot, but I'm seeing a lot of finfish. So I'm moving to the paddle tails. And again, this time of year, it's a lot of purples. If I get into some nice green water, I'm throwing a chicken on a chain kind of color. One that worked really well for me last week was it had like a pearl belly with a clear top and silver glitter in it. I'm fishing low. I'm hop hopping it, and I'm giving it a minute, and I'm hop hopping it again. So I'm kind of expecting those fish to be down there. And a side note is the bite lately has not been a thump. It has been, yeah, that feels a little bit weird, and set the hook, and it's been a trout almost every time. Because trout aren't as cool as redfish. I would say that would probably be why the bite isn't like that. No, I think what it is, you know, me and this guy, we've been fighting over barometers forever. In my opinion, and the right answer, also my opinion, the fish, whenever you get into that barometer, if you go to Bass Pro Shop and you look in their tank, and it's a high, go away. Hey, just let him take the questions and be the host. a lot of times whenever it's a high pressure day outside, those fish are lower in that tank at Bass Pro. And for what I do to catch those trout when they're doing that, is that's why I'm fishing low. And I think they're not in a super I want to eat mode, but it's just putting it in front of their face and they kind of just grab at it. I cook a lot of them in the top of the mouth, and what that tells me is that fish isn't biting it and turning on it aggressively. He just kind of slurping it up. And yeah, barometer. That's why, John.
This time of year, let's talk about redfish, because we all know that they're more important. Eventually, they're going to get on these little crabs. It's coming up here real soon, especially up the Galveston area and the marshes. When you find those redfish and they're not eating, and you're throwing, you know, you're sight casting to them, well, there's redfish. You're flipping it at them, you're sight casting to them, and they are just totally turned off, and they just wander off. They're not paying any attention to it at all. Start watching. They'll be poking up against the sides, like on the bayous, and you got the mud bank. It's got the little holes in it. And if they're starting to nose those, they're clued in on the little baby crabs. And generally up here on this end of the coast, it'll start sometime March and April. It varies from year to year. I've seen it in May. When they do that, that's the only thing they want. And that's where fly fishermen really shine, because we can match that. We can actually match that hatch and throw something that looks like a little crab. If you're throwing regular lures, you're kind of in trouble when they get like that. It makes it a little difficult. I've had luck throwing a small paddle tail, you know, the little DOA paddle tail in a real dark color, and just kind of crawling it on the bottom. I guess it kind of maybe looks crabby. I don't know. But most of the time I'll switch over and just do fly and throw something that has a crab profile to it. The other thing that we're starting to see is the small bait fish are going to start popping. Little shad, there's going to be a shad hatch. There's going to be a rain minnow hatch. By the way, one of the guys stopped by the booth a while ago at the DOA booth, and he was talking about he was running in the dark, and on his lights, he was starting to see little flashes. I like that a lot. You know, he's starting to see glitter on the water in the dark, which that means there's a glass minnow hatch that has happened. So over the next few weeks, those glass minnows grow really quick, so they'll get up to an eating size here pretty soon. The thing to throw when you're around any glass minnow hatch is something that's clear with some sparkle to it. I like the clear with a holographic sparkle that DOA has. It's not like a glitter. It's not a little small glitter. It's a longer piece of glitter in it that's more of a holographic look to it. And it really imitates the glass minnow as well.
All right, I get to ask these guys questions every week, and I've always considered myself a pretty darn good fisherman, but I learn something from these guys every week, and when I'm on their boats or they're on my boat, even more so. So if you have any questions, now is not the time to be bashful, because these guys will absolutely help you. Anybody? All right, so the question is kind of a two-part. I'm going to interpret it my way. They didn't have options to fish, didn't want to get, Cole beat up. They went into the intercoastal. So my mind went here. I'm going to start with Scott here. I don't mind fishing the intercoastal if it's that choppy. There are places to be had in the intercoastal. Some of the things that you're going to look for there. And then the option, the other question, Scott, is can you get tired catching those fish? What are the options when you do get tired? I think that's a great point. What do you think?
It's hard to get tired of catching big fish, isn't it, buddy? You were enjoying it, right? Having fun. Let's just keep doing it. That's a tough one. I haven't had any customers get tired of catching big fish. Okay, the bite on the big fish quit. So now what are we going to go do? We're going to go catch some sheep's head, more than likely, by going and hitting some structure. Yeah, I love taking kid trips because they're excited and they're fun about catching anything. So I'm going to go to the next easiest thing, you know, what I know is going to work. And right now, sheep's head are really good. As the summer progresses, our little snapper, our little mangrove snapper are going to be all around those docks, all up and down the intercoastal. You can fish those on a windy day. You can catch a lot of them. Gaff tops. Honestly, man, gaff tops in the intercoastal is a killer way to go about it. Anytime a barge goes by, throw behind that barge. It's got that mixed up water. If you can get a hold of some squid, squid's really, really good on it because it stays on the hook well. There's a lot of options. It's not the glamour of going and catching big trout or going to catch, you know, sight casting redfish. But my whole thing when I got kids on the boat is get a tug on the line, man. And you did great catching the, you know, being able to get out there and catch a drum. The other part of the question, just fishing the intercoastal.
Yeah.
The intercoastal has a lot more going for it than what everybody sees it as a long ditch. You know, it's just a straight ditch. There are washouts. There's riprap where they've tried to fix the washouts. They've got all those little squares of concrete. There's straight up and down banks. I've done a whole lot of, on a real windy day, if you're out with me on a guided trip and you want to fly fish and it's really windy and I've told you we probably shouldn't go, we're going to end up in the intercoastal and we're going to pole right along the edge of the intercoastal. I get tailing fish. I get tailing reds along there. Some of the biggest flounder I've ever seen have been on that drop-off along the intercoastal. I mean, massive, big, big flounder. There's plenty of fish in it. In fact, during a lot of the redfish cups, way back when I fished the tournaments, that was on windy days, we were taking a popping cork and a gulp, and we were going down the intercoastal, and we were throwing at every piece of structure that we could find and popping that cork. And we did really well in redfish tournaments doing that. Every fish that's in the bay is inside those intercoastal walls.
I don't know how much you want to talk about sheep's heads, but I actually was talking to Armin, so I'm going to get you on the sheep's head. My buddy Armin there, he had a buddy that was catching, I saw a guy that was catching some sheep's head. Very underrated fish. I think the intercoastal is very underrated as well. But his question to me off air here was, how close do you have to get, you know, to that structure, the piling and or whatever it may be on it? Is where you have to get. But if you can just talk about sheep's head, because I know you've done this a lot, scraping the pilings and all that like we've done, and then we'll get your thoughts, Caleb, on how underrated exactly the intercoastal is. I can't tell you how many times, you know, it's usually almost a last resort for me. I'm like, well, I didn't catch here. I'm going to just go down the intercoastal, and that ends up being the best part of your day.
Okay, on sheep's head, if you are interested in getting into them, wintertime's a great time to fish the jetties for sheep's head. I use a little kale hook. You know, it's almost like a circle hook, but not quite. But I use a smaller size one, like a number one part of a shrimp. You know, just the tail end of a shrimp is plenty. If you can find little small live shrimp on the smaller side, that works great. One secret old man showed me years and years ago, he loved catching sheep's head. I hate cleaning them. They're a pain to clean, but he loved catching them. And we would go up to the bridge on San Luis Pass and take an old wooden oar that he had in his boat and just start scraping up and down the sides of it and scrape all the barnacles off when there was a little bit of a current moving. We're chumming. That's basically all we were doing. And I'll be damned, every sheep's head along San Luis Pass Bridge would start coming over there to us, and we caught some monsters along there. One of my buddies had one. I did it for him, and he was in first place on the Star Tournament, held first place all through the entire Star Tournament with like a, I think it was a 10-pound, 4-ounce sheep's head, leading the whole way, and that was back before computer was a big deal, and you had to go to the bait camp to look and see who was winning, and he got... where he had this guy, he bought him beer at the bait camp, and he would call him, and am I still on the leaderboard? Yep, you're winning. The last week he got beat twice, and he came in third place. He went from winning a boat and a motor and a trailer to an ice chest.
So I'm not going to get on the intercoastal too much because Scott hit a lot of it, but it is its own base system, its own ecosystem. There's coves on it. Off the sides of the intercoastal, usually just about the whole thing, you've got 30 yards or more of a flat that's only a couple of feet deep. There's grass beds all in it. I would be willing to say that as many redfish tournaments have been won from the intercoastal than has from back lakes, and I'm almost willing to put money on more than from the bay. The intercoastal is a powerful spot. There's entire summers where I made my living every day for 90 days without leaving the intercoastal. Just throwing a popping cork, you know. I don't throw a lot of plastics and stuff there. I like a popping cork with about a 12-inch leader to make a racket with. In the fall and in the spring, I'll find schools of redfish pushing down the intercoastal. As far as, you know, would I get tired of catching big fish? I don't. Cole. Let me ask you a question. Come here, Cole. Now, first off, Cole, I want to ask you a question. did you really catch that many big ones?
Yes, sir.
Now, let me ask you this. Were they as big as your dad said they were?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
They were big as they was? Oh, we're pulling out pictures. So while he pulls out the picture, I want to ask you a question. That's bigger than what your dad said it was, Cole.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Did it slide up on its belly and do tricks and you fed it sardines to reward it? So I guess the real question here, Cole, is why would your dad ask silly questions? Like, why would you get tired of catching those things? Is that what we're getting after?
I don't know.
Cole, do you think you can keep catching them?
Yes, sir.
That's what I'm talking about. Cole's a man of many words. Hey, I had a sheep's head story come up at my booth a while ago. I have a buddy. He's an old rodeo buddy of mine. He is one of the best saddle bronc riders in the nation when we were in college together. And he shows up, and he's kind of got into fishing lately, and now he's getting into fly fishing. And he shows me this.
Cody?
Yeah, Cody. Yeah, Cody came by and talked to you. He wanted to book a trip with me, but I knew that you were needy, and so I sent him over to you to do some fly fishing. But he shows me this picture. He's got this fly rod, and he's got this big old sheep's head. He probably showed you the picture too. He's got a big old sheep's head, and in my vast knowledge of fly fishing and sheep's heads, I know that this is like something that fly fishermen are proud of. It's kind of hard to make them eat. And I was like, wow, man, you came a long way. And he kind of grinned. He's like, well, we found a bunch of them, and I was casting to them, and they really wouldn't eat. So I got little bitty shrimp, and I put them on my fly, and I just held it out there. He said, but it was great fun after we caught it. It was a good deal. And look at the picture, man.
Mangrove snapper in Galveston, and how do you target them?
Yes, and small shrimp. Small shrimp on the kale hook, just like I was talking about for the sheep's head, right against structure. Really, really tight to structure. The docks around Freeport, really good. The jetties, anytime you're at the jetties. My favorite thing to do at the jetties in Port O'Connor is to back off of them and look at my depth finder. And when I hit about 13 to 15 feet, somewhere in that range where the rocks are going down, that seems to be where they hold most. I don't know why. You can drop straight down to them. Just use just enough weight to make it hit the bottom straight down under the boat. If the current's moving too much and it's swinging, forget it. It's not going to work. But if you can drop it straight down to that, let it hit the bottom when it hits that rock, lift it up just a little bit, about 6 inches, and it's like crappie fishing. And I call them the crappie of the bay. And you lift it up a little bit, and you get just... Now you got you one. When my wife wants something to eat, you know, she tells me she wants me to bring some fish home, I usually will buy a pint of shrimp on my way out to go tarpon fishing and go check the beachfront. And I swing by there, and I do my little doodle sock in there, and I catch me a little handful of them. We got maybe 6 or 8. Throw them in the cooler. Now I can go do my thing, go do what I want to do.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Oh, yeah, she just slapped him and said, see that? That's what you're supposed to do, man. I've been married 35 years, 36 years. That's how you keep them happy. You know, she says she wants some fish. Okay, I'll get you some fish. I just go over there. I work my butt off for these fish all day long.
I like to just throw the crab trap so I don't have to mess with anything else. Just get her some crab. All right, any other questions? Yes, sir, in the back. Did you message me that? I got a message with that exact question on the Bite Me group page on Facebook, which you guys can join if you want. The exact question. Three things that we would take out if we only could take three things fishing. Oh, three baits. Rod, reel, and three baits. I'll start this one. I get to answer a question. I'll take a corky, probably chartreuse and pink or chartreuse and orange or something. For sure, 100%. I'd take a topwater. Probably if I'm taking a corky, I'd take a smaller topwater, like the one that Scott's going to, he knows the exact name, going to tell you about. I don't know if that's what you'd take, but I love it. It's a small, soft topwater that DOA has. And I would take my soft plastics. You guys know I'm a Deadly Dudley guy for 15 years, 10, 12, 15 years. Electric chicken, It's pink with a chartreuse, or I would take the white knock and tail. That's four, isn't it? I cheated. Oh, what rod and reel? Well, my fine friends at Laguna just picked up a brand new Laguna rod. I might take that one because it has the Texas A&M logo on it. It's custom made. No, I would take the green rod. I'm a complete convert for the Fishing Tackle Unlimited 6.5 foot green rod. Reel would be a lose. I'm easy. I love the lose reels. Probably the smaller sport version. I just like that small profile on it.
See, the trouble with this question is I'm a loaded thinker, because that Corky's going to feed you for about four fish,
yeah,
and you're done. Yeah. If we're talking like my favorite go-to stuff, I would probably take. I'm real big into the Laguna liquids. I think the medium light is a good price point and all that kind of stuff, but I think it's a very versatile rod. I've become really fond of the Shimano Corrado. Use lose, great, but I've been throwing that Corrado along with them, and I've become really fond of it. I'm not making any judgments now, but the Corrado for sure. For baits would be probably Rapala Skitterwalk. I've fallen in love with the double Ds, and I think, Mike, does Mirror Lure make double D? Texas Custom Lures. They look like a soft dine, and the difference of them is I can work it, and whenever I pause it, it slowly rises up. So I can fish it over shell and grass and whatnot, but it's still a real slow suspend. Huh? I have waited to drink until we're done with this, so this isn't fair.
You said whatnot.
Whatnot. Okay. Well, is there people that I got a beer? I've become a big fan of these things, though, and I've caught a lot of fish on them. I've only been fishing them for a week. And then my go-to is the 3-inch cowl shad from DOA with the paddle tail on it. Texas croaker, to be exact. Purple back, gold belly, chartreuse tail. So that's it. Laguna liquid, Corrado, and those three lures.
Okay, but it's a soft plastic, so it's going to tear up. You only get one. I mean, yeah. Have you seen my garage? There ain't no way in hell I can just pick three. Man, the top water that he's talking about is called a PT7 from DOA. Great little top water. Soft plastic, weedless, single hook. You can bury the hook up inside the soft plastic. Again, the only problem with your question is if I use that one, it's going to get torn up at some point, and then I can't use it anymore. So I'm going to have to go hard baits. Yeah, if I'm on a desert, is this a desert island question? I'm on a desert island. I only get three baits. I'm going to have to use a small topwater like a, I don't know, mirror lure soft, you know, the pup or something along those lines. Then I'm going to go with a spoon, going to have a gold spoon in there. Got to have that. And then I got to have some kind of a mirror lure, Miradine, something along those lines, something that's going to sink slow and be a mullet imitation. Rod and reel, it's going to be the FTU green rod, the new one with the carbon fiber handle, because it's nice and light, and I'm going to be stuck on that island a long time. I'm going to get old because I'm going to catch more fish than them, so I'm going to live longer. And then I'm going to have my Shimano Corrado DC, and that's going to be my setup all the way. Now, if we were just going out for the day and I got to pick three lures, yeah, I'm going soft plastics. If I got to fish hard and I got to know that I got to bring some fish home, we're going to have to eat them. I'm going to have a curly tail of some type, especially if it's in the fall. I'm going to have a white curly tail. They all give off all kind of good action without even having to work them real hard. Then I'm going to have a paddle tail of some type. Yeah, probably the 3 and 3.5 inch that he's talking about. Picking colors, that'd be based on the time of the year, you know, and whether I'm going after trout or redfish. If it's trout, I'm going to go more silver. Redfish, I'm going to go more gold, just my personal preference. And then I'd throw that PT topwater, because I can throw it into anything and get it back out. I mean, it's not going to hang up anywhere. I'm not going to lose it. The only thing it's going to do is get torn up by fish, which is a good thing.
So... You just laid out four different scenarios: desert islands, staying alive, all this stuff. None of us have even talked about taking our wives. 19 years, you said? 35. Oh, he is old, yeah.
back to the fishing show and more questions with Captain Caleb, Captain Scott. But I did want to add one thing here and then back to the questions in the fishing show from a discussion we had off air about when and where to start wading, deep, shallow, what determines that. Something we discussed off air, and I thought Tim Stamps and Jason Law from Wade Right would be perfect to answer that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Age-old question, and I've been asked this a lot. I know Cap Scott, Captain Caleb has as well. When it comes to wade fishing, where exactly do I start? Not necessarily like bait and what you're looking at, and maybe you've already made that decision, but shallow or deep, find that highway, as I like to call it. Back with Jason Law and Tim Stamps, which officially has become the world headquarters of coastal fishing gear since I mentioned it a while back. But what is your thought on that? I have mine. I'm going to share it, but I don't want to contaminate your opinion here. Shallow or deep, where do you generally start when you start a wade, Jason?
Oh, John, generally I start where I have to because I'm vertically challenged. So I'm the guy that gets to fish in the shallow water. Being 5'8", I don't get to go very far before it starts becoming a problem. But I'll start up shallow early and move my way out, you know, depending on what the weather's doing, what the tides are doing. But I generally start at the bank and just work my way out. There's really no rhyme or reason because it's where I have the most ability, and then I'll go till I can't go any further and it's almost coming over my waders, which is probably about 3.5 feet.
You know, Tim, one thing with me that always happens, if I don't know the place, I'm kind of not scouting, but if it's a relatively new place that I haven't really fished a lot lately, I always tell people I start wherever my boat is. In other words, if, you know, obviously in my freedom, I can get up into 10 inches, 8 inches of water. And sometimes I do. But sometimes I kind of see maybe I need to start a little deeper because there's some activity or something that on the bay bottom that interests me. So my general advice is start where you stop your boat. You know, get as close to your boat as possible. If it's deeper, that means deep. You start there. If it's shallow, you start there. What are your thoughts?
No, that's a great question. For me, a lot of times if it's a new area, especially, we don't have a really good idea of bottom, what it feels like, where the fish may be. So we may drift a little bit first, get a couple bites. We're going to put the power pole down, put the anchor out, and get out. But we're going to get out where we know that it's safe to get out, right? So it's to your point, you know, kind of where the boat is, right? If we're on fish, that's where we're starting. We may nudge the boat somewhere where it's safer to get out, where we're not, you know, submerging everything, taking on water and waders, or, you know, dunking everything, by hopping out, in too deep of water. And then we'll throw back kind of in that depth where we got bit while we were drifting.
One more thing with you real quick though, Tim. It's fascinating to me. People on the shoreline like to cast out. People drifting like to cast in. It's counterintuitive. Most of my bites have been in relatively shallow water lately. I'm going to try to start there, but people, a lot of times, waders will get out of the boat in shallow water. They'll turn their back to the shoreline and start casting out. And, you know, if it's a friend of mine, I'm like, well, let's try this. Why don't you go down the shoreline or whatever? But you have to kind of remind yourself why you're in the shallow water is because that's where you want to cast. And people tend to almost get caught up with, I need to cast further. I need to cast further. So that means if they're deep, they cast shallow and vice versa. No, you don't have to necessarily cast further in or out. You can cast up and down the shoreline.
No, absolutely. I think when I'm out, I take kind of a wagon wheel approach. I plant my feet and I'm going to throw every direction, right? And I'm going to move slow. and try to find where they are, right? That's the beautiful thing about wade fishing. You get to cover so much water, but really slow, so you can be strategic with it, right? So I'm going to throw shallow. I'm going to throw deep. Now, what you've got tied on certainly, you know, will affect where you're going to throw, right? If you've got a quarter ounce plus jig head, or a big topwater and you're trying to throw it up near the grass, you may get stuck. You know, you may ruin that area, right? So you got to kind of be strategic. You know, if you're in the shallower water, I'd like to throw something a little lighter and smaller profile. If I see a redfish or something, I'm not going to spook him, right? So I think it kind of depends what you're throwing as well, where you're throwing specifically.
I don't know if you have anything to add, Jason, before we get back to the podcast, but one thing I want you to add is what's going on with Wade Wright. I know you've got the fishing show going on right about now. So what else is happening, and anything to add to what Tim said?
Don't be afraid to turn and throw to the shoreline. Work the grass, work the pockets, work the points that are coming out, look at the terrain, see what's there. If something's different, you know, the one thing I've learned about redfish is it's like bass fishing, and that's almost identical. Is they're very structure oriented, and so working those shorelines and those little differences, it may be a little mud cliff that you see hanging off that's different than the next set down. That's something to throw at. So a lot of people just walk by that stuff and don't look at it. And without, you know, taking that opportunity, they miss that redfish or that flounder that's hanging right out there. And so that's just one of the things I'd like to add on that. But we just wrapped up the Houston Fishing Show, which was great again this year, as always. And it was great to see all the old friends and meet a whole bunch of new ones. It was a wonderful deal that we always have every year, and a lot of great camaraderie with our fellow participants that are involved in all of this. So next up, we have the Gotfish Expo, which is in late May, I think the 20th through the 23rd, somewhere around there. But so we'll be out there getting ready for that show and be out there. So come see us down in Hitchcock, and we can hook you up with any of the Wade Wright, Madre Sling, anything you missed at the Houston Fishing Show, we'll have it for you there.
All right, and that Gotfish Expo is fantastic, especially if the weather's good. It's outdoors largely, and it's a lot of fun, and the Wade Wright guys will be there. All right, that's good stuff. Let's get back to the podcast. Any other questions? I saw one right here, yeah. That's a loaded question because it has a lot of levels to it, depending on the time of year and the weather conditions. But I think, Scott, what this is talking about, I'm going to start with you, because you and I are on the same page with this about the highway and finding the highway. I think that's what you're talking about. You know, whether to go skinny, how do you know, when do you go into the deeper water, maybe even all the way to 10 feet of water. Is that accurate?
10 feet of water? Never. I mean, not for trout and reds, not in the bay. I'm not going to go fish that deep. Most of my fishing is, you know, 6 inches to 2 feet for the most part. And I can catch fish there pretty much year round. What he's talking about with the highway, the fish are generally going to be at one depth. Now, they may be right up against the bank. They may be out a little ways and in 2 feet of water or 4 feet of water on the drop off to 6 feet of water or whatever it is. But wherever you find those fish, that is kind of like a highway. They run parallel to the bank, especially trout. And they're not going to zigzag a whole lot. They're not going to go up 2 feet and then drop back down to 6 feet. So as you wade out and you're working your way out there, whatever depth you find fish at first, concentrate on that depth and that distance from the shoreline or that type of bottom. You know, if it was an irregular bottom, it's got some shell to it and it's going up and down, but it's in 4 feet of water, try to stick to that. 10 feet of water. I mean, I used to fish a lot in the middle of East Matagorda Bay. I don't know what this is. It's Caleb. It's always Caleb. He's always my problem. We used to fish the middle of East Bay a lot when I was in Galveston when I was younger, and we fished a lot of deep reefs, and we would drift across those deep reefs in the summertime. Dead of summer, those dead still hot days when it was when nothing else was going on, and yeah, it just had that, everything had that dead feeling. We'd go out and drift those, and that was the time we went really deep. I didn't fish a whole lot during the really, really cold weather because I was a duck hunting guide, and on those days I was making money duck hunting. But nowadays I don't fish those cold weather days because I really don't want to.
I really wasn't listening because were you talking about when freshwater was on top or no?
No.
Okay, cool.
Freshwater on top.
So to address your question as directly as I possibly can, if I'm going out fishing with a group of people and they don't care whether we're wade or whatever, it's just captain's call, right? Multiple factors go into whether I'm shallow or deep. If I'm on a bluebird day, I'm deep. If I'm on a day where, you know, I've got some cloud cover, the barometer isn't too bad, this and that, then I'm more likely to go shallow. As I'm running across that bay, I'm watching, looking out for bait and stuff like that. If I get to the south shoreline and there's bait there too, well, then I'll just make a call. If I get to the shallow water and there's not bait there, then I won't. There was a summer, I can't remember when it flooded so bad in Galveston, but I was guiding over there for that year, and when we had all that fresh water come in, then I was in 10, 12, 15 feet of water because the fresh water is sitting on top. Yes, but it's all feel, but if I see a bunch of stuff that's making me feel like it's going to be a negative bite, I'm going to go deeper every single time.
All right, we got 5 minutes, so we're going to go Caleb Scott, rapid fire, keep your question tight, and we'll go as many in as we can. Go ahead. What do you do when there's no bait?
What he just did, punt. No, I mean, you just got to go start searching, start looking. Something's happening. You know, and if there's no bait and there's no birds working, there's no nothing, and it has that dead feel about it, that's the day that you go learn more about the bay. Go learn something else. Spend every day on the water trying to figure something out. And if you can't catch fish, might as well go learn something about the bay that you've chosen that day.
But
rapid,
I got the bait.
Rapid fire. Sorry, Caleb. Another question right here. East Matagorda Bay, what's changed post-freeze?
Matagorda is getting back to a good spot. We've caught some really big fish there. We've caught numbers of fish there. It's obviously still wounded in many regards in that, you know, Pat and I talk about that a lot, where, hey, we had a really good day, but how good could it have been, you know, if we hadn't have got whacked last year? But at the end of the day, that hurricane came in. It brought some new water, brought some new fish. East Bay is getting back. It's not where it was, but she is recovering, and I think that even the limit change is going to help us out with that some.
All right, rapid fire, one more question, but I got to get with Scott Null real quick. We have a segment that we have pretty regularly on the podcast called the Boat Ramp Confessional. Everybody's done stupid crap on the water, myself, everybody. But something happened last night, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, it happened last night. I'm glad he turned his mic off. But you know, I give Caleb a hard time, and it's well-deserved. That's why I give him such a hard time. That's part of why we're friends, is because it gives me something to do. Last night, we're sitting over there. We're finishing putting together the DOA booth, me and Ed Zayak from DOA, and we finish it up, and Caleb's kind of hanging out. He brings us a beer every once in a while when he remembers. And everybody's just kind of – setup day in here is fun. Everybody just kind of hangs out. We all BS, and we get our work done. Well, Caleb comes over. He goes, hey, y'all want to go out to eat? And Ed says, yeah, I'll buy you dinner. You know, you've been bringing me beer. Yeah, come on. Let's go. He said, where you want to go? We start talking about it. Said, how about Ninfa's? Yeah, the old Ninfa's over here on Navigation. All right, cool. Caleb stands there and looks Ed dead in the eye. And he says, and me and Ed still had some finishing up to do. Caleb's finished with his. And he looks Ed dead in the eye and he says, Ninfa's, table for three. Ed says, yes, sir. That's it. All right. Everything's cool. We finish up. We go by our little Airbnb and we drop our clothes off, drop our bags. We hook them on over there. We drive down Navigation. We get to Ninfa's and we go walking into Ninfa's. And as we walk in, you know, as you do when you know somebody's got you a table, you walk in, you start looking. You know, you look around the corner, you see where they're sitting, and there's no Caleb. So we walk around the other side, the bar side. He's going to be at the bar, right? Chances are good. I walk around there. No Caleb. No Caleb. So I pick my phone up. So I think maybe he's in the bathroom. Call him. Hey, Caleb, where you at? Ninfa's? Really? Where at? At the bar. I look at Ed. I look at the bar. I look at Ed. You see him? Nope. Are you sure you're at Ninfa's at the bar? Yeah, I'm sitting right here. Well, we're standing at the bar at Ninfa's. Goes, oh, okay. Hold on. Oh, I'm at El Tiempo's bar. He was at a bar, just the wrong one.
I had the right theme. And I learned something else yesterday, too. When you're in an intersection down here, and you're in a four-way, and you're thinking that it is the stupidest thing on the planet that everybody but you has a traffic signal, and everybody's looking at you like you're stupid, no, that means you're on a one-way. That happened. That it threw me off on my way to Nymphas.
Last one. Who had it? Somewhere right here. Somebody had to quit. Yes, sir. Ever any luck in the deep end of the gaff top? But I'll let
world's shortest answer.
Yeah, world's shortest answer. If you see birds working, it's gaff top or something else. But one thing I wanted to add to his, and we're wrapping up. Last question. You don't realize how shallow the intercoastal gets. Yeah. And you need to kind of get that in your head. Yes, it's 30 feet deep or whatever, but you can run the entire side of the intercoastal if you see bait, 8 inches of water, 10 inches of water?
The majority of the intercoastal is like 15 feet deep in the middle. The edges, you would not believe how many people I pull off of it when I'm headed back from a trip and they are stuck on the edge. It's shallow, shallow. That's what we're trying to tell you earlier. It is a fishery. There's zero doubt about it.
Thank you guys very much. Bite Me Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook. And we post every Wednesday. We posted one just about 3 hours ago. Thank you guys. All right, guys, that was a lot of fun at the fishing show this past week. And, of course, if you were not there, we highly recommend that you get out there. We had a blast. Old home week, so to speak, which we talked about last week. I've got to see all my friends and some of the guides and people that we all talk about. Had a great discussion with Ed Zayek from DOA with Captain Scott. No, we were out there talking about 30, 40 minutes about everything fishing. If you haven't been, get there next year. Get to the fishing show. Of course, there's one coming up real soon as well down in the Galveston area that we just talked about. But it was a lot of fun. Next week, we already have a lot of topics left over from here that we're going to hit on the podcast. And, of course, thanks to everybody who was out there. Captain Caleb, Captain Scott was out there all 5 days. I was out there a couple of days. And, of course, all our friends from all our partners and buddies of ours that we fish with. Good to see you guys over at the Boatyard, of course. Jake Hoshi, JT, did a fantastic job. I know they sold some Freedom Boats, and I was out there having a good time with them. Anglers Anonymous, don't forget that Anglers Anonymous was having a really, really busy week as well. Mike Butler does such a fantastic job out there, and I'll see him this week. He's actually going to be selling some of the OG sauce at his store as well. Hey, and Captain Caleb, what a great job he did. He just on a lark, he asked me if he could sell some of that OG sauce at his booth and sold out 12 cases, I believe. So thanks to you guys. Thanks to them. Captain Scott Knoll, ScottKnollPhotography.com. If you want to get some Bite Me gear, we saw a lot of that at the fishing show. And certainly that's cool to see. Hats, shirts, a lot of selfies out there. Captain Caleb TV, give my guy some love. He does such a fantastic job on YouTube at Captain Caleb TV. Until next week, again, we got questions and topics lined up. If you want to get us some more or something piqued your interest from this podcast, feel free. Just drop us a note at the group page on Facebook. Certainly at Lopez on Sports on Twitter, at Lopez on Sports on Instagram. Captain Caleb TV is on, Captain Caleb is on Instagram as well, as is Captain Scott on Facebook. But the best way is get the topics via the Bite Me group page. And thank you for subscribing, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcast, and wherever else you get them. We will talk to you next week. Until then, it's going to be a good weekend. At least Saturday's going to be really good weather. Didn't get to what would Scott do, what would Caleb do, but we will next week. All I know, the weather's looking pretty good on Wednesday, so you guys catch them up, and we will talk to you next time.